I gotta love that. You know, a little bit of Big Bang Theory right there. You know, we've all probably had an experience like that in one way, shape, or form, whether it's a bad church experience, as Eric explained a few minutes ago, or maybe being on the raw end of some kind of judgment, some kind of, you know, feeling like I'm not quite good enough to make it into actually in the doors of a church. And so this is why we're beginning this series today called My Bad Church Experience, because let's be honest, we've all had them. I've had them. I've had, there's a fair share of them all over the place. And so we're just going to begin to kind of dissect this a little bit because, you know, Crosspoint kind of exists to create a place for people who have given up on church but haven't given up on God. And so if this is your first time with us today, we're really excited you're here today. If you're here every week or regular around here, welcome back. My name's Kurt, by the way. I'm a pastor. That's what they call me around here. And so we're going to dive into this. And, you know, the fact that I'm a pastor is actually kind of a surreal thing that I'm actually standing here today. For me, I actually promised myself I would never, ever do this right here, right? I mean, I promised myself I would never work in a church, you know, and then a chain of events happened in my life that kind of caused me to open up to it a little bit, and then I made a deal with God. I don't recommend deals. It's all I knew. It's all I had at the time. I didn't know what else to do, but they're not really good deals, you know, things to do. But I said, God, I will work in a church as long as you don't make me the lead guy. I will never be the lead guy. And you can see how far that got me, you know, today. And so, you know, and so it's interesting because, you know, if you don't take anything else out of today, remember this one thing. Never say never to God, all right? Never say never, because God remembers those things. And in fact, just a couple weeks ago, I was having a conversation with God, and I said, God, I will never be a millionaire. I'm just kind of wanting to see what he does with that. I mean, every time I say never, you know, it's like something happens. And so, you know, it's interesting because I grew up as a preacher's kid, and, you know, that was kind of surreal, a bit weird at times. There was a lot of good parts of that as well, but I remember, you know, playing pickup basketball games on my driveway, and, like, all my friends are over, the neighbor boys are over, and, you know, we'd break to take a water break, and somebody turned the hose on, you know, drinking out of the hose, and my one friend would always pause, and he'd be like, Kurt, is this holy water? And I'd be like, no, it's the water out of your freaking well, like your house has. I mean, it's the same water. All right, there's nothing holy. They'd ask me to blessed, and as if my home, you know, had different water. And I never forget going to a birthday party, you know, and looking back, it's kind of a funny story. It wasn't so funny at the time, because, you know, when the pastor's kid showed up at people's homes, you know, everybody knew, like, be on your best behavior, don't use certain words around them, you know. And so, you know, we're standing there, the birthday party, the table's set, pizza's on the table, drinks are poured, everybody's ready to eat. I'm like 8 or 9 at the time, and everybody's just kind of awkwardly kind of like, okay, well, you know, what do we do next? And you know, kind of like, you know, the pastor's kid's here, so, you know, we're supposed to do something before we eat. And so, you know, it's just this awkward moment. And finally, the host just kind of breaks the awkwardness, you know, the parents, and they're like, well, let's say a blessing, you know, for the food before we eat it. And everybody's like, oh, yeah, that'd be a really good idea. We do that all the time, you know. And so, you know, so we're standing there, and all of a sudden, little Curtis Walters, why don't you say the blessing for our food? And I'm just going, no, seriously, I'm like 9. All right, I mean, my dad's the pastor. I'm not the pastor. But, you know, of course, I went ahead and I said the prayer. I'm standing there with God, you know, thank you for this great cheese pizza. And all the while I'm praying, I'm saying under my breath, I will never do this in my life. I will never be a pastor. And, you know, so it's interesting, some of those experiences. And let me show you what it looked like to be in a pastor's home, in case you were ever wondering. You know, we had something called, back in the day, a church directory. We don't do those around here. If you don't know what that is, you're better off for it. Just trust me. And, but, you know, I'm going to take you back. This is a little retro, right? We're going to go back to 1981. This is Reverend James Walters and his beautiful wife, Michelle, and their handsome 4 boys right here. Take a look at this. Oh, look at that. I mean, gotta love the 80s right there, 1981, and that, if you know my family, the guy that looks, the handsomest one, on the upper left, that looks like my son Matt, that goofball is me, all right? And in fact, people used to wonder, they'd come up to my parents, and they're like, what's your daughter's name with the frosted hair and the curly locks behind her ears, you know? Well, that was me. My hair was actually longer than that at times. It was all natural, by the way. And, you know, in fact, my son, a couple weeks ago, we have them lay their clothes out, you know, before school, night before school, before they come to church. And I said, man, I want you to wear your khakis and your nice V-neck t-shirt tomorrow. And he's like, Dad, man, why do I have to dress up to go to church? I'm like, I just looked at him, shook my head. Dude, you have no idea how bad it used to be for us. I mean, you're getting off easy. And they don't do church directories anymore, I don't think. In fact, at least we don't here. But, you know, a church directory, it's kind of like Facebook or Instagram. I mean, that's the modern version, right? And have you ever noticed in Instagram photos and Facebook photos, everybody's always happy. Everybody's always smiling in pictures. And church directories were the same. I mean, look at that. Everybody's smiling right there. And at least on the exterior, that's the way it is. But here's the truth about that photo, or really any photo you see on Facebook or Instagram. Behind every photo, there's a story. And behind every story, there's a past. Let me say that again. Behind every photo, there's a story. And behind every story, there's a past. And as I look at that photo, you know, there's good things that that raises for me. There's some difficult things that that raises for me right there. This photo right here is the same as any other photo. I mean, that's a photo, but there's a story behind that photo. There's a past behind that photo right there, for instance. My parents were good parents. Let me just say that off the top. Did the best they could. Julie and I sit around, and we're like, how are we screwing our kids up today? What are they going to sit around and talk about when they look back? But as I look at that photo, here's what I can tell you. My mom grew up in a home where her parents had intimacy issues. Not just between the two of them, I believe that happened, but she never, to this day, recalls hearing the words, "I love you," from her mom or dad. And that carried with her even into her adult years. I mean, she's smiling right there. It's in the photo. You just don't see it. My dad came from a family that seemed to be the perfect pastor's family. He grew up in a pastor's family as well. I mean, come on, a long line of screwed up people, all right? I mean, pastors are we're working through our stuff too. And it looked like Warden June Cleaver. I mean, it looked like the perfect family, and yet two of his brothers were very rebellious. They were always in need of rescue, always demanding most of the attention from my grandparents, at least the way I've understood it. He and his sister were kind of the ones that were left on the sidelines a lot, kind of left, you know, without being in the limelight, because the two that were always rebellious were requiring all the time. And so, you know, he and his sister actually responded different ways. They're kind of the conformists. You know, my aunt disowned the family. I mean, I don't think the family's heard from her in like 20 years. She said, "I'm done, I'm out, never want to hear, talk, or see you all again." My dad, on the other hand, he was kind of more of a conformist, I believe, and he was kind of always looking for approval from his parents. I mean, because they were always off taking care of somebody else. And it's in that photo right there. You might not see it. I mean, there's smiles, but behind every photo is a past, and behind every past is a story. And it's interesting because the reason I show you that photo is because I think for a lot of us, when it comes to bad church experiences, it's because there's something in our past. You know, there may be experiences, moments where we look back and we're like, man, I've got a major failure in my life. I've got a major struggle going on. Maybe there's been a loss or a marriage failure. And for whatever reason, the church or somebody in the church has judged us or in some way alienated us or disqualified us from being able to have relationship with God. And we feel that. We sense it. We hear it. We hear it in the mumbles, in the mutters. And I think today people both inside the church and outside the church, you know, we have this struggle of going to church because, you know, there's something in our past that we feel, you know, other people are judging us for. And this is true all over the place. In fact, just this week, Friday, in fact, I got an email from somebody who we'd gotten pretty connected to over the last year, somebody who walked in our doors for the first time here at Cross Point a year ago. And it was kind of a cool email because it was titled "A Year in Review at Cross Point," which is always, you know, interesting to see what this is. But it just, yeah, I tell you what, you would talk about something that ties in to this idea of a bad church experience. Let me read a part of it to you. She said, "It's been almost a year since I walked into the doors at Cross Point, clutching my daughter's little hand in one hand and a flyer promising good coffee, low lights, and that I could leave if I wanted to. I'm so thankful for this church. I came from a religious background where questions and paradox and mystery were swept under the rug in favor of shining light on what was bad, evil, and wrong. This has truly been a year of growth and joy to feel part of a community where the focus isn't on shining the light on all of my darkness, but instead light shining out from it." And then she goes on to talk about some of the stories from the Bible she always struggled with a little bit. She said, "I was scared to address these stories because I knew that they seemed in my mind to be against the very character of God and the stuff that just confused the bejesus out of me." She says, you know, she lists all these questions. Why does God act like a traffic cop all the time just waiting to pull me over? Why can't any of the gospel writers get the events in the right order if it's always all so important? Why did my youth leader develop a stutter? And when I asked about it in middle school, it was as if I'd stumbled upon the most unholy of questions. Why were the Methodists reading it right, but the Baptists were reading it wrong? And why is everybody so self-righteously angry with sinners? I mean, weren't we all supposed to be sinners? What the heck? And why can't I say heck in church if the preacher can shout hell, hell, hell from the pulpit? I told her, by the way, she needs to start writing for us because she's a great writer. She said, you know, so a year ago in August, I began slowly approaching the Bible as if I was approaching a rattlesnake that was ready to strike and draw blood at any moment. I knew for sure it was going to bite me and then probably strangle me. What I didn't expect was that it would actually comfort me and hold me and grow me. The more I read and studied and listened over this past year, I've learned to realize that the God I thought I knew as a kid was just a bathrobe drama version of a fearful and broken church. I grew up with a hand-me-down version of Christianity that had been dirtied and stained and patched over, but everybody kept propping it up and spit-shining its brokenness. I'm so glad God gave me this church as a light shining out from upon, out from under it and not upon all of the darkness in my life. I'm glad this church is of and for broken people who don't need a spit shine, but a complete restoration, of whom I am the worst. I thought, man, it's pretty cool that somebody could actually write that and it'd be okay. In fact, it reminded me of something I heard somebody say a few years ago. Somebody was talking about how they almost didn't survive the church of their youth because the church didn't know how to deal with Christians that had problems. And so what happened is we just kind of sweep it under the carpet. We just don't talk about it. We ignore it. And eventually people just kind of quit church because it's like, I can't be real. I can't be who I am. And so I just kind of peel off because the church is only for perfect people. I mean, if you're somebody who's got brokenness in your life, if you're somebody who's had a failed marriage, some kind of sin addiction, some kind of moral failure, you know, those people stay away from church. And then, of course, there's others of us who, you know, we've been disqualified from church. We've been disqualified from God, but the person that's disqualified us is actually ourselves. In fact, this statement right here, if you can answer this statement or fill in this blank, I'm disqualified from God or church because, if you've ever filled the blank in right there with anything, then you've probably disqualified yourself. Because in some place you've gotten this idea that the church is for perfect people who have it all together. And in reality, you know, when it comes to God, you know, we can't really feel like we can be who we are. We have to put a show on. We have to, you know, just sweep it under the carpet. I mean, we just kind of lift it up and keep it all under there because it stays there, right? I mean, as long as we ignore it, it stays under the carpet. No, it doesn't actually. In fact, well, what we know, you know, logically, physically, from experience, is whatever's under the carpet, it continues to show up in our present, and it actually influences our future. See, unresolved issues show up in our present. We sweep them under the carpet. They show up in our present, and they influence our future. But what if the opposite were true? I mean, what if the things that you would call a failure, the things that I would say, man, this is a struggle of mine, I've really struggled with, this is a place where I just totally blew it right here. What if God actually used those things to redeem and restore, and not only for your good, but so that others that you come into contact with, that you kind of intersect life with, might actually be encouraged and brought hope because now you're in a position to help them see that God can actually do something in their life as well. I mean, I hope that's really what the case is. I mean, I believe the local church is at its best when people are willing to roll back the carpet a little bit and bring out what we've shoved under there for so long and not talked about. And we've thought, man, I got to keep it hidden. I can't talk about my struggles. That we can actually be open and honest and let God restore and redeem and then intersect our lives with other people who are going through the same. I mean, but see, this is completely opposite of what people think about. That's why here at Crosspoint, we've had this mantra from the beginning that says, you know, it's okay not to have it all together here at Crosspoint. In fact, I've taken hits for that. I've had people send me emails saying that's theologically bad, Kurt. I mean, that's, you know, you're saying it's okay for people to come and be screwed up. I'm like, that is what I'm saying. I mean, because I'm one of them. Yeah, it's okay. And the reality of this is it's fascinating when you read the Bible because you begin to realize everybody's screwed up in the Bible. I mean, you know, everybody needs counseling. I mean, you just start with like the first chapter, the first book of the Bible, Genesis. You have Adam and Eve, and all of a sudden there's this rift in their marriage. There's this distance between them. And then all of a sudden they kind of abandon God. They're in relationship with God. They abandon God. And then one of them tempts the other with a fruit that actually creates the downfall of all humanity. And then their kids are screwed up like them. I mean, one of them kills the other one. And that's just the first chapter, all right? I mean, you know, if you want to feel good about yourself, read the Bible, because, man, it's going to make you feel really good, all right? I mean, you know, the only perfect person in all the Bible is a guy by the name of Jesus. He's the only one that had it all together. Everything else is this story of how God has used people throughout history to restore and redeem, and then that story teaches us. And so today, we're going to look at a guy named St. Paul in the New Testament. You might know him as St. Paul or the Apostle Paul. And you know how he got the word saint in front of his name? It's because he's probably responsible for more of the New Testament than any other writer. All right, St. Paul is responsible for the beginning of the launch of the church movement. I mean, the Church of Jesus Christ started with St. Paul. I mean, he was a part of that. If you're married, you probably had 1 Corinthians 13 read at your wedding. That's St. Paul's words, all right? And Paul, man, to do all of that, he must have had it all together, right? I mean, he surely had it all together, right? It's quite the contrary, actually. In fact, I think if Paul were here today, I have a hunch Paul would be appalled. I think remember that. Paul would be appalled, all right? Paul would be appalled if we actually put saint in front of his name. I really think he would. In fact, he had another nickname for himself. You know what he called himself? He said, hey, if you want to call me something, if you want to refer to me in some kind of nickname way, call me this. Call me the chief of all sinners. The chief of all sinners. Now, that doesn't sound very good for somebody, you know, writing the story of God, right? I mean, you know, St. Paul sounds better. St. Paul, Minnesota sounds better than chief of all sinners, Minnesota, right? I mean, there's just a different ring. But the reality is Paul was willing to pull back the carpet and actually invite God into the process and to restore and to renew and to restore his past, to work in his present, and to prepare his future. And he gives us this great example. So we're going to look at the book of Acts today. And the book of Acts is the first book in the Bible in the New Testament after the four Gospels, Matthew, Mark, Luke, John, Acts. And this is a story when the church kind of takes off. This is when, you know, the church is established and this community of people, like right here, begins to form and people begin gatherings like this. And, man, it's growing like wildfire. I mean, there's momentum building. Like, there's thousands of people coming to a relationship with Jesus daily, entering this thing known as the church. And the momentum is building. And then it's just as quick as it's building, it comes to a grinding halt because it begins to hit these roadblocks, these little speed bumps, if you will. And the speed bump is a guy by the name of Saul. And Saul later took on the name of Paul, otherwise the Apostle Paul or Saint Paul, or as he calls himself, the chief of all sinners, Paul. So here's his story in the book of Acts. Here's how he begins in Acts 26. He says, I too was convinced that I ought to do all that was possible to oppose the name of Jesus of Nazareth. So see, at this point in his life, he was opposing Jesus. He was out actually against people who were following Jesus. And he says, and that's what I did in Jerusalem. So right off the bat, he's actually acknowledging what he did here. He says, on the authority of the chief priests, I put many of the Lord's people in prison. And when they were put to death, I cast my vote against them. Now, this is significant right here because what he's saying, hey, all these Christians that were going to jail because of what they believed, all these Christians who actually died for what they believed, he's like, their blood is on my hands. I actually cast a vote for that. I actually killed them by supporting that they should die because of Jesus. He keeps going. See, this is why he'd say, hey, if you're going to call me something, call me the chief of all sinners. Many a time I went from one synagogue to the other to have them punished, and I tried to force them to blaspheme. I was so obsessed with persecuting them that I even hunted them down in foreign cities. I mean, this guy's going out chasing down people who are about the life of Jesus, and he's throwing them in jail, he's killing them. And here's what's fascinating and encouraging at the same time to you and I. Here's what happens next. It gets so bad. Paul's out opposing the church. He's opposing Christians. He's putting people in jail left and right. He's persecuting the local church. And all of a sudden, Jesus shows up on the scene. Now, you know it's got to be bad if Jesus shows up, right? I mean, this is right before Jesus went into heaven. And I'm pretty confident you have issues in your past. And the reason I know that there's probably some things you've kind of shoved under your carpet is because I know in my life there's things I've shoved under my carpet. I mean, we all have these. And yet, I can tell you that it's never been so bad that Jesus actually showed up to address it. So, I mean, for Saul, it's bad, all right? It's bad. And so Jesus shows up, and Paul's still killing Christians. He's still sending them to jail. And here's what Jesus says to him. He says, Saul, Saul, why are you persecuting? And he says, it doesn't say the church. He says, why are you persecuting me? So he says, these people, you're persecuting me when you persecute them. And here's what's most fascinating. In that moment, he immediately says to him, hey, Paul, Saul eventually has his name changed to Paul. So he says, Saul, I need you as a tool in my tool belt. You are actually going to be my mouthpiece to spread my message around the world. I mean, imagine that. There's a guy by the name of Ananias. who God kind of impresses on his heart that he needs to pray for Paul, and that Paul's going to be appointed to be this mouthpiece. And he's like, wait a second, you're talking Saul? You're talking the guy Saul that was killing Christians? You're talking Saul who was out, you know, murdering Christians and putting them in jail? And he's like, God, do you understand what you're doing? I mean, have you ever had one of those conversations with God where you're like, God, do you really understand that? I mean, I just saw this great blessing this person got, or how you're using, do you understand how bad they are? I mean, have you ever tried to convince God of something as if he doesn't know? You know, this is what Ananias is doing. He's like, God, I mean, of everybody on the planet that you could choose, this is the most unlikely candidate right here. I mean, come on, God, this dude's really bad. I mean, nobody wants to be around him. You're going to use him? And Jesus is like, that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. See, let me tell you something. If you think you're an unlikely candidate to have a relationship with God, if you think you're an unlikely candidate to be used with God, you know, if you somehow feel like your story, there's no way God could use you, you're missing the point. It's why you know, God's, you know, the Cubs' greatest fan is God, Chicago Cubs. I mean, God loves them because they're always the unlikely candidate. I mean, God loves unlikely candidates. And the reason I know this is because I was an unlikely candidate. I mean, if God can use me, I'm a chief of all sinners, and I'm shortly behind Paul, if God can use Paul, then listen, there's hope for all of us. I mean, if God can use a little 9-year-old kid standing praying for cheese pizza saying, I will never do this in my life, will never do this, then I think God could connect with you. I think God could use you. There's one more verse that I want to look at that Paul writes here, and this is going to kind of be a challenge for us today. Every single one of us, whether you're here for the first time, whether you're a regular around here, this is the verse I want us to think about. What does it mean for me to live this verse out this week? Here's what it says in 2 Corinthians 1:4. This is Paul speaking again. He says, he comforts us in all of our troubles so that we can comfort others. When they are troubled, we will be able to give them the same comfort God has given us. Now, what Paul's saying right there is he's saying, hey, if you have the courage to actually pull back the carpet a little bit and to begin to confront your past, begin to stare at it and get real, you know, get in tune with reality, that there's actually stuff under this carpet, then God can actually use you. And this isn't just going to benefit you. You're going to actually intersect other people's lives. And as God begins to do this thing in you, restoring and renewing and redeeming and taking something terrible that's happened in your past, whether by your own doing or something someone has done to you, God will actually use that to help others who are going through the same thing. And so he's saying, I want to invite you into this verse, and that's what I want to do. I want to invite you into 2 Corinthians 1:4 today, and I want us to kind of say, how can God use my past regardless of what it is? Because we all have a past. Behind every story, there's a past. Behind every picture, there's a story. Behind every story, there's a past. And all of us have pasts. And so there's kind of a three-step process that we can go through to do this. Three quick hitters on this. And so I want to walk through these here real quick. The first is this. I mean, if we actually want to acknowledge and work through our past, whatever that is, we have to acknowledge our past. Acknowledging your past is good. And what that means is we come over here and we say, you know, there's stuff I've shoved under. There's times where I've played church or I've played God or I've, you know, acted like I'm good. I'm acted like some of the stuff in my past isn't impacting me. I've just shoved it under my carpet hoping it's not going to show up. But it's funny how it just keeps showing up in my present. And it actually begins to dictate my future the more and more I look at it. It's being willing to say, man, there's stuff under there. I'm going to roll that back. I'm going to begin to look under there, because see, we have one of two choices. We can either roll back the carpet or we can hope that it stays there. So the first step is acknowledging your past. This is good. Step number two is dealing with your past, and that's better. See, that's the next step, is dealing with it. See, in corporate America, there's this big buzzword that's been going around for like the last 10, 12 years. And I like the word. It's the word authenticity. Love authenticity. I love to be authentic. Love to just be the, you know, I want to be the same person whether I'm here with you or sitting having coffee at Starbucks. I try to be the same person in every environment. But see, here's the problem I've been seeing with authenticity. Sometimes we think I can just be authentic. I can be exactly who I am. And then we stay right there. You know, see, that's acknowledging, but it's not dealing with it. It's not actually making the turn where I actually begin to deal and work through what is going on in my life. And this happens for so many of us. We say things like, you know, man, I got something so personal. Man, this is between me and God. I mean, this is a me and God thing. I mean, if anybody ever heard about it, heard that I was struggling with this, man, they would think less of me. They might not even want to be my friend. They may not want to have their kids over to my house. And the reason I know that you say things like that is because I say things like that. I used to say all the time, man, this is between me and God. Kurt, you got anything going on in your life right now? Nothing I need to talk to you about. Me and God, we're working on some stuff, all right? And that was that way until one day when I heard a guy by the name of Bart Campolo, and he said something that just really rocked my world and changed this for me. Here's what he said. He said, if there's anything in your life that's just between you and God, let me assure you, it's never getting to God. And I kick back, I'm like, oh, it's getting to God all the time. I'm always talking to God about it. I'm always acknowledging to God, but I'm not really dealing with it. See, God put people in your life for a reason. And I began to learn that if I'm not sharing with another trusted friend or, you know, another person that cares about me, that'll love me regardless of what I tell them about myself, if I've not invited somebody into that process, I'm not really dealing with it. I'm just acknowledging it. So we've got to deal with it. We've got to roll up the carpet, and we've got to move beyond the secret of sight and say, hey, who's somebody in my life I can actually share this with, and that they can actually help me begin to grow out of this? You know, for me, this was like a pattern in our family. I didn't realize it until a number of years later that I was sitting around talking with my grandfather, who was a pastor, my dad, and I was sharing about something I'd been dealing with and some of the guys in my life that had helped me get through it. And I just said to them, I said, who are those guys for you? I mean, I'm just wondering, who speaks into your guys' life? I mean, my grandfather's like 75 at the time. My dad was 50. And they just both sat there, kind of quiet. And they're good men. I mean, I don't at all want to give an impression they're bad men. But they never had that kind of community. In fact, my grandfather got a little, you know, bent out of shape, and he kind of slammed his fist down on the table. He said, one time I had something that I did that I just struggled with, and I shared it with another pastor, and he told somebody else, and I decided that day I would never tell anything to anyone again. And I just sat there and thought, ding, ding, ding. This is why I struggle with this, because I've never been modeled for me what it looks like to have authentic community where people speak into your life, where your spiritual life isn't maybe as private as we want it to be. I actually can talk to people, and they're going to love me the same. Not everybody. I mean, there's people that aren't going to respond that way, but people that are really aware of their sinfulness will quickly come alongside and say, hey, how can I help you with this? So you see, acknowledging our past is good. Dealing with our past is better. Third one is leveraging our past is best. Leveraging our past. And this means that if you don't have the courage to actually roll back the carpet and begin to address, you know, the mess that's under the carpet, then what ends up happening is not only do you miss out, but somebody else misses out as well. I mean, listen, I would have never imagined. I mean, I've had people tell me stories, and I'll sit with at times. I mean, I, you know, have counseling appointments throughout the week that people schedule because they're dealing with stuff. I've dealt with a lot of interesting things. And I can't tell you how many times somebody's come back and said, man, Kurt, I never imagined that messy divorce I went through. I never imagined this addiction I was dealing with. I never imagined, you know, this difficult relationship with my son or with my daughter. I mean, I never imagined. Here's what they'd say. I never imagined that the struggle that I went through would be the very thing that actually brought hope and encouragement to someone else who was going through the same thing. I never would have imagined it. I mean, go figure. I mean, I've heard that countless times. One of my mentors once said to me, he said, because I used to always worry, man, when I moved into a lead role and had to, you know, get up and teach many weekends throughout the year, I thought, man, what if I run out of important things to say? I mean, I know you don't believe that would ever happen as much as I talk, but, you know, what if, and one of my mentors said, Kurt, if as long as you speak out of your brokenness, you will never run out of material. I'm like, great, because I've got a lot. Man, we'll be going forever because I could talk about my brokenness. But it was interesting because just in the last 2 weeks, I've had a couple guys talk to me about some issues they're dealing with. In fact, they've texted me, emailed me, and said, hey, can I get together and meet with you? Because at some point over the last 6 or 7 years, they've heard me talk about my addiction to pornography back in my teenage years that bled over into my young adult years, a couple years into my marriage, a couple years into my first years of ministry. And just how it had a hold, this dark secret thing that just gets darker and darker, and how it had a hold on me, and the guilt I experienced of knowing the real me, but putting out to everyone else that I had it all together. And they'd heard me talk through the process that I went through, and so I began to talk through that with them, and it was interesting because with one of them, I said, hey, listen, you've got to nail this thing, and here's why, because you've got a son. In 3, 4, 5 years, your son is going to come across pornography. And you need to be in a place where you can actually mentor your son in a healthy and whole way in how to deal with this issue. And if you don't nail this for you today, and in these next few months, you will create a porn addict. by simply not addressing it. The stakes are huge. See, it's not just about me, you know, receiving the healing from the brokenness, the healing from the pain, the healing from the addictions, but I'm actually keeping someone else from maybe experiencing the same thing in their life. See, that's leveraging your past right there. That's 1 Corinthians, you know, 2 Corinthians 1:4 at its best right there. And listen, if there's hope for me, man, there's hope for you. I mean, if there's hope for Paul, there's hope for all of us. Right? That's why we've created this place where it's okay to not have it together. We don't have to come in and play the games and, you know, act like put on our church front. I mean, we can be real. And you know, and that's the good news. The challenging part is this. It requires all of us to dig deep and take a step on this. It requires every single one of us, whether we're here for the first time or we're regulars around here, to say, you know, what does it mean for me? Where am I at in the process? Do I need to peel the carpet back? Do I need to deal with something? Is it my time to begin to use my story to impact others? Because we got to get this right. The community around us needs us to get this right. And listen, we're not the perfect church. I don't want to give any impression we're the perfect church. Perfect churches require perfect people, and we're far from it. But we are, as we're authentic about growing and always moving on to the next place in our lives. We got to get it right. So I want you to take out your connection cards that Eric referred to earlier this morning. We're going to bring the house lights up. And, you know, I want us to all process, what's my next step today? What do I do with this? Maybe for some of us, you know, we've never acknowledged our past. We've never got to the place where we've peeled the carpet back. It's never been okay. I've never been in a church where it's okay for me to say, yeah, I've got some issues, and I just need to be up front. They don't need to be a secret anymore. I can actually, you know, acknowledge them and begin to move through them. You know, maybe this is something that someone else did to you. Maybe you didn't choose it, but there's some kind of abuse, and it's just created a lot of pain, and it's always been hidden. And maybe today is a time to acknowledge and begin to roll it back and say, God, I want to begin to receive grace and healing. I want to redeem something. I want you to redeem something in my past and begin to make it new and take it to new places. Maybe that's your step, is just acknowledging. Maybe you've been acknowledging, and it's time for you to deal with your past. That's the third step on your card there. And dealing with your past is something that you can't do on your own. It requires others. In fact, if you would like, if you want to write a short little sentence or so on that line that says, this is what I'm dealing with, you know, we will respond to every single issue that comes in on this card this week. If you have something you want to write down, say, I struggle with, you know, spending issues. I struggle with porn issues. I struggle with another addiction, or I'm having marriage issues. We're going to respond and send you some next steps, some potential next steps, some resources, some things that you can engage with that will actually help you begin to deal with this and move out of that so you can begin to leverage this. Now, if you're not comfortable writing that on this card today, we've set up a website, crosspointweb.org/dealingwiththepast. That will pull up a form where you can just fill in your name, contact info, and just a short synopsis. You don't have to give details. Just tell us what it is that you'd like us to send you some material on. And we'll give you all kinds of resources to help you move through. Or maybe you've gone through these steps and it's time to leverage. It's time to be able to intersect and look for opportunities to leverage your past and say, hey, let me tell you what God has been doing. Or maybe you're here for the first time and you're thinking, man, here, this is big stuff. I'm not sure I'm ready to take these steps, but you know, I've never been in a church where it's okay to talk about my past and nobody's going to look down on me, nobody's going to judge me, and so I'm just going to commit to coming back over the next 2 weeks and see what God does. Because I'm interested in God, I've just kind of bailed on church. And so maybe you want to mark the first box here. Because you see, the way I see it, we've really only got one of two options. We can either peel back the carpet, we can stop hiding, we can stop playing the God game, and we can peel it back and say, you know, I'm going to deal with the mound. I'm going to deal with the dust. I'm going to let God begin to restore and renew. Or the other option is to say, hey, I'm just going to keep it there. I'm going to hope it doesn't follow me around. I'm going to hope it doesn't show up in my next relationship. I'm going to hope it doesn't show up, you know, as I parent my kids. I'm going to hope it stays there. But what we begin to realize is it continues to follow us and show up and influence our future. So you see, the Apostle Paul, I mean, listen, he calls himself the chief of all sinners. God did some pretty incredible things through his life. And if God can do something in Paul, if God can do something in Kurt, I have great assurance he can do something in you. So I'm going to pray for us in just a second. And before I do that, I want to tell you, we're going to sing a song after that. It's actually going to be an old hymn. If you like hymns, you might connect with this. But it's a song that talks, it's really a prayer. It's a prayer song that talks about how God is in the business of taking things that are difficult, that we don't really want to face, and he actually gives us the hope to face tomorrow. That because Jesus is alive, tomorrow actually can be better. And so we're going to sing that prayer. And I'm just going to pray that it would get very clear to you what your next step is today. So let's pray. God, I'm thankful for this time. I'm thankful for this place. God, I thank you for Paul and for giving us this example of somebody who had the courage to say, hey, I don't have it all together. In fact, I'm the chief of all sinners. I mean, here's the guy that penned more of the New Testament than any other writer. And he's saying, hey, I'm screwed up. But look at what God is doing in my life. God, I thank you for your power. I thank you for your grace. I thank you for the encouragement and the comfort that we receive when we see this guy, Paul, and how you took his pain and his brokenness and actually used it to touch people's lives for centuries. God, I thank you for my story. I thank you for the pain that you created in my life or that was there, that I created, that you then restored and redeemed and have been able to use. I thank you for your grace. And God, I just pray that grace would wash over this entire room right now. God, that we would get very clear on what our next step is and how whatever we need to take or do or acknowledge to kind of bring some of that stuff out from under the carpet and allow you to create and write a different story. God, I pray that would happen in these next moments.